Welcome to episode 3 of Coffee Chats, and today we're here with
Mr. Ming.
Yay! So, you know, this is actually our second time talking because last time there were some technical difficulties, but we're glad to be back. Last time you ordered a brown sugar shaken espresso with 3 pumps of brown sugar and no cinnamon powder.
Okay, so, it's actually oat milk.
Oh, yeah, oat milk.
Yes, but thank you so much for that drink. And also, thank you for having me for this chat. It was a really fun experience last time with some technical difficulties. I enjoyed that drink. So thank you for having me.
Explain us your coffee order.
That coffee order, it's always my little afternoon pick-me-up type of drink. I love espresso, and I love oat milk, and I like them to be shaken. and I don't want them to be too sweet, so that's why I always control the sweetness a little bit.
At three.
Which is, I think, decent. And then no cinnamon, just because it kind of kills the coffee taste.
I do agree.
So I kind of do that, yeah.
I also like oat milk. Do you like oat milk?
It's all right, but I prefer just, like, milk.
Oh, I see.
I'm not lactose intolerant.
Oh,
sorry. I'm a huge lacto person, so I cannot.
Yeah. And another big thing is we're so glad to have you back from paternity leave.
Yay.
So what's it like being a new father?
That's a very difficult question because my life just kind of changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I could kind of like pinpoint my life in just basically two part. It's like one part is everything before I had this beautiful daughter, and one part is everything after she happened. I think I have a different sense of purpose in my life, a little bit more of a responsibility. But at the end of the day, I think I just really love to see my daughter daily. She's smiling at me finally. Aww. And it's I cannot describe that in a perfect way, but just being a father means like now I have somebody who's looking up to me.
Aww.
And smiling at me every day, and it really changes how you start the day. It really changes your perspective of life. So that's just kind of like a glimpse of what father's like to me right now.
Yeah. How do you like to unwind and find time for yourself? Because I can imagine like being a father, you don't have that much like free time just like having to balance.
So right now, we're definitely kind of in a period of adjustment. We are trying to kind of like, you know, be, I think I'm trying to be more like a 100% teacher and 100%, you know, a good father at home. But I sometimes need some time to take a deep breath and just rest. But the problem is, you know, when you're home, you're just always surrounded by, you know, baby crying, you know, babies needing something and your wife asking you to do stuff. So I don't really have so-called man cave at home right now. So what I decided to do is I made my toilet closet my man cave. So whenever I need to utilize toilet, I kind of give myself extra 10 to 15 more minutes scrolling down the reels and looking at all these news. And my wife sometimes yells at me for staying for too long, but... But that is my time to really unwind myself and give myself some, just a little bit of break.
That's so valid.
And that's been working out so far. Yeah.
Just tell us more about your outside life, maybe.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe I can kind of explain like my just regular day-to-day life because I don't think my outside life... I guess the definition of the outside life before having a baby would be like, hobbies. What do I do on the weekends just for funsy stuff? But now that I have a baby, we need to live very strict routine life. You probably think that, you know, like having a baby means like your life will not be structured or whatnot. But my wife and I are very structured people. Mm-hmm. So we always like to set great routines for a baby, and baby's following through that routines. Aww. So right now we are kind of like literally waking up at 5:30 a.m., get things ready. Like I prepare my the breakfast and my wife's breakfast and get ready to come to work. And she's kind of doing her pumping stuff and then, you know, getting ready to welcome baby. And we welcome baby together at 6:30. That's usually the time the baby wakes up. So we wake her up and then I say goodbye. And then she spends a whole day with, you know, mom. And I come home and I, you know, basically go through the procedure of like sanitizing myself. First, there's like a, you know, like I want to make sure that all the germs I carry from school and students who are coughing at me all the time, I'm going to wash myself first, and then I take care of baby, play with her while my wife cooks dinner. I kind of like take care of baby and put her back to sleep for like a short nap. We eat dinner super quickly in 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
And then we get back to, you know, playing with her together. And then the bedtime routine starts. And once that's done at 7:30, that's the time when we kind of like talk about the day and, you know, like just, you know, watch K-dramas together. and then that's kind of like a us time right now, which is what we are doing literally on every single day. There's no distinction between weekend versus weekdays for us right now at this point. But we're actively trying to do, like, on weekends, grocery shopping. Or maybe this weekend we're trying to go to UTC for the first time with baby. And we'll see how that goes.
They open Unico. There's, like, a long line for everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, my parents went over the weekend, last weekend, yeah. I heard it's really good.
Yeah? I heard it's super big. Right?
I've been there twice now.
Twice? Wow. That's crazy.
I went like on the opening weekend and I went over last weekend. It's pretty nice. It's really big.
Oh, good, good, good. I can't wait to go there.
I still get to go to Uniqlo, but I do want to go. Do you talk to your baby in Korean or English? Because you and your wife are both Korean.
Yeah. We're bilingual and we actually had a lot of you know, we researched about, you know, like how to teach our baby to be bilingual. So right now we are kind of in a phase where we're only talking to her in Korean. But then kind of like between my wife and I, we kind of talk in English here and there. Konglish, what we call it.
Yes.
but to baby, we're only speaking to her in Korean right now to build her kind of like language. But as the time goes on, we're thinking about kind of doing two language, created some structures around it where my wife will speak in English to her and I will be speaking to her in Korean. So we're trying different structures out. Yeah.
Yeah, I speak Korean at home primarily, and I think that really helps with, like, being bilingual, because I think if I didn't speak Korean at home, you know, being in America, it's like you only really speak English with, like, all the people around you. So I think having, like, time where, like, you're just speaking in Korean, and my parents always encourage us to, like, just speak Korean at home and, like, try not to use, like, as less English as possible. Mm. And I think that's helped a lot with my bilingual status, because I'm pretty fluent in Korean because of that. Do you speak...
So they tried and failed. I can understand conversationally and I can say some phrases, mostly curses, but yeah, I can't like read that well. Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. You can always learn.
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you and your wife are very structured people. So what are your guys' MBTI personality types?
Oh, MBTI. We know each other's MBTI. we have the same MBTI.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
okay.
I am ISFJ, and she is also ISFJ, but her F side is kind of like 51% F.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Whereas my F is around 85%. I'm a feeler.
Oh, so
more
you're
so than more so than my wife, who's very logical person.
Oh, I see.
And she is her I, introvertedness, is around 85%, whereas my I is around 55%. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm a little bit more extroverted than her. But, I mean, there are some, like, you know, variations there. But overall, like, we kind of, like, get along really well with having the same MBTI. Yeah.
I'm a INFP, but the I and the E shifts a lot. Oh. I think last time I took it, I actually got ENFP. So it's because it's always been at like 51-49. So I think I'm just like a classical like ambivert. And I'm also, my N and F, it's like my N is, I think I'm like 80% N. And then F, I think I was like 63%.
Wow.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah, I'm like, I always kind of like, nowadays I always get introverted. But growing up, I had E. But for some reason, it has changed back to the I. Mm. And I think it's mainly because, you know, when you're working as a teacher, like, sometimes, like, I have to bring a different version of me out every single day. And that version is usually, like, you know, very, like, energetic, passionate, and just talkative when I am really not sometimes. And I like to kind of, like, get my energy back by just being by myself. And I think that also attributes to why I'm always kind of getting I nowadays.
Mm, yeah. I see. What's yours?
Oh, I'm INFJ. I think I tested like 85% introvert.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm pretty introverted, but I think like as of lately, especially like the last year or two, I had to bring out more like extrovertedness just because like of my like, you know, being leader or just like being involved in a lot of groups around school.
Yeah, I think like, you know, being a senior, being in a lot of leadership positions, it's like you have to kind of force yourself outside of your comfort mm-hmm. zone. But honestly, I think it's a good trait to have, like, to function in society, because like everyone has days where like I like don't want to interact with anyone today, but like you have to still have to get stuff done.
It's like a little facade.
Yeah,
you just,
so you have
fake
to
fake it until you make it.
Yeah, fake it until you make it. Yeah. Oh, what's a K-drama you like watching with your wife? What have you been watching recently?
So as an introvert, I think I just want to add a little bit more to that. It's like, mm-hmm. it's all about how you spend your time to recover.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So for me, like, K-drama is kind of like something that we always watch together with my wife to just kind of like de-stress.
Uh-huh.
And also my wife works in the field where she has to deal with a lot of, she has to bring out her interpersonal skills. Mm-hmm. And that kind of forces her to also kind of like, you know, watch sometimes K-dramas to not think about a lot of stuff and just relax. So we've been watching lately the Queen of Tears. And that drama is too much, by the way.
It's very dramatic.
It's
so dramatic.
It's like overblown.
Oh, yeah. It's so overblown. And I'm like, but we still watch it just for fun.
Yeah.
And then what else did we watch? We are anticipating, though, actually, more upcoming K-dramas, actually. Mm-hmm. We are looking forward to seeing Squid Game 2, which is coming out on December 26th.
Yes.
You're welcome, Netflix. doing the promo here. But I'm super, like, stoked to see so many like great actors and actresses coming out on mm-hmm. this particular season, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Seems like a very expensive film. I think they're taking all the money they got from season one,
yeah.
pouring it straight into the cast.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they got so much acclaim that like they can afford it.
Yeah, they can definitely afford it. It made a lot of money. It was like a big hit, you know.
Yeah.
Like, I remember when it first came out, I watched it. I thought it would be like My Little Secret. It definitely was not a secret.
Yeah. And it was like some niche kind of thing, and then like
it was all over everything for like like the next couple of months.
Yeah.
Oh, and shifting the conversation back to like your teaching, what is your favorite math to teach? Because you teach one honors, two honors, three honors, and also you're teaching AP stats next semester.
Oh my gosh, I cannot pick one because every class has like a uniqueness to it. I think I can speak to my IM1 honor right now because I'm teaching that.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that class because you're working primarily with freshmen who are
optimistic.
I should be who are very positive, who sometimes can bring out their, you know, middle school version of themselves. And you know, I have an extensive experience with middle schoolers. So for me, like, my I Am One Honor class brings out my teacher side more often.
Oh, I see.
And then I love that side of me too. I think kids can sometimes feel a little bit intimidated by that side, but I think, you know, it's a good balance. You know, I try to have a lot of fun with it. So it makes me feel like I'm back into the profession, that class. My another favorite class, I think, is also like I Am Three Honor. And that class is a little bit different. Mm-hmm. You can kind of like have a little bit of a personal side out of it. So it kind of like lets me be able to kind of balance between my person and the teacher identities. And last one, my AP stat, with juniors and seniors, mm-hmm. I think I can be a little bit more like just me.
Yeah, in that class. Like a little friend, like relax.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I'm like, you need to kind of like do this, set the expectations high.
What about senioritis?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm looking forward to that in next semester.
AP first period, senior, second semester, that's going to be
tough. Oh, that's going to be tough.
That was last year. You know, I had a first period AP stat, and a lot of seniors were tardy, so I had to actually, you know, hunker down and then like sit down with individual. How can I help you to get here on time? Type of conversations were some things I had to do last year.
I think like first period and fourth period get like the bulk of like senioritis.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes because like first period it's like relate, and then fourth period it's like really like, checked out. So then, I will not snitch on any seniors, but I think the attendance rate for fourth period classes for seniors is a bit lower.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What made you decide to teach math in the first place?
Yeah, it's a great question because my undergrad majors are not math, actually. Mm-hmm. I major in history, political science, and education. I did interdisciplinary like studies. Focusing my senior thesis on the politics of American education.
Mm.
So I didn't major any of the big things in my undergrad, but I got into the student teaching and teaching fellowship. And through those experiences in the Bronx, New York, I was assigned to teach math to middle school students. And I really found love with math. I think I can be very specific with standards, and I can use those to kind of pull out data, and I can kind of like adjust lessons more fluidly, and I can pull small groups and do a bunch of different intervention, which is something I really love doing. Got me really kind of look into loving math. Teaching math, actually. And as I have done more studies in my master's in secondary math education, it really kind of like opened my eyes into many things, such as like how we don't have a lot of math teachers in America. That's like a big issue. Two, that a lot of the students here in America, like we are definitely not doing so well in terms of the STEM field compared to the other countries out there. So I was like, oh, that really kind of sparked my like passion for doing something for the community, doing something to kind of like make sure that we are growing in terms of our abilities in doing the STEM work, because that's going to be the next generation work. That's going to be something that's required for upcoming, you know, industries with AIs coming up. So yeah, and that led me to kind of like, you know what, I want to actually make some meaningful impact in students' like achievement.
Definitely. I mean, I'm definitely not a STEM person. I'm definitely not a STEM person. I think I always like struggled with math even when I was like younger, but because I was in your I'm the honors class, I won't elaborate on. It was, there were some embarrassing moments for me in that class personally. But I think you were like one of like the best math teachers that I've had, who actually Thank like you. Supported me, you know, in that class.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to say this though. There is no such thing as I'm not a STEM person, or I am a STEM person, because if you really want to categorize that, then I am not a STEM person, technically, right? I think I love the art of teaching, art of facilitating learning. So if you put that in that category, then I am not a STEM person. But what makes me a potential STEM person is because I constantly try to learn myself a different way of thinking about a problem. And that is a life skill. And math is great at that, you know, like there are many ways to approach a problem, and that's something that you can always apply in your daily life.
Yeah.
We have problems. A lot of everybody has a problem, but I think it's how you approach it and how what kind of mindsets you bring into it matters. Mm-hmm. So I do think that Sage, you really demonstrated like that mindset though. I know you say that you're not a STEM person, but you really truly demonstrated the mindset of, you know, like, this is a problem, but I'm going to attack this problem different ways, different perspectives. I'm going to bring different mindset today to this challenge. And you overcame a lot of those.
Thank you.
I was so proud of you,
Sage. Thank you.
So don't say that you're not a STEM person.
What are your thoughts? You're a humanities
conservatory. I am a humanities conservatory and have taken like all the history courses and most of the social science courses around here. Let's just say, I found myself painfully average at math, and like I'm not as inclined towards it. No hate to the field, not my favorite though.
Oh, speaking of humanities, you were just doing Model UN. How's that like?
Usually, I think, you know, I've been kind of advising that club. This is the already third year doing that. And that club has grown to be a, you know, really great opportunities where students can bring a lot of interest in literally international politics and have opportunity to share and then opportunity to compete in a bigger setting outside of the school.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going really well. My role as an advisor is not that big. A lot of it is a student led, and I think it's a great club for any students to participate, and also any students to participate in a 4 years of their CCA year to really become like leadership. Take that leadership positions as a club leader, because those club leaders really have to do a lot of the work outside of the school, kind of like organizing the rides and organizing everything to make that Model UN conference happen. So join that club.
To like end it off, like we usually like to accompany the podcast or like especially posts promoting this with a song, so could you recommend a song?
Yeah, what's a song you really like listening to recently? And also let's end this with the hot take.
Song. Okay, I'm gonna have to choose a song that really comes into my mind right now. Rosé, Bruno Mars, APT.
Yes, good classic.
I love that song right now. That's been on my playlist on repeat every single day. My hot take, Taylor Swift is overrated.
Ooh. Like, you don't have that much time to explain it.
Yes, I don't have that much time, but I'm going to go real quick. Okay. Taylor Swift, great. I love her. I love all the songs that she had earlier. But nowadays, it became just super like pop.
I see.
Poppy. I think it just kind of gears more, widened the audience.
I see.
Anyways, okay. That's just it.
Well, thank you so much for joining us for a third episode of our podcast.
Yes. It was a pleasure to have all of you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me again.